Hey, Blue, look at all these families. Hi, families. It's time for a pride parade.
Families marching one by one, hurrah, hurrah. Families marching one by one, hurrah, hurrah. This family has two mommies. They love each other so proudly, and they all go marching in the big parade. Families marching two by two, hurrah, hurrah. Families marching two by two, hurrah, hurrah. This family has two daddies. They love each other so proudly, and they all go marching in the big parade. Come on, friends! Families marching three by three, hurrah, hurrah. Families marching three by three, hurrah, hurrah. These papas are non-binary. They love each other so proudly, and they all go marching in the big parade. Families marching four by four, hurrah, hurrah. Families marching four by four, hurrah, hurrah. Trans members of this family all love each other so proudly, and they all go marching in the big parade. Come join the fun! Families marching five by five, hurrah, hurrah. Families marching five by five, hurrah, hurrah. Some people choose their family. They love each other so proudly, and they all go marching in the big parade. Families marching six.
Well, that's the Blue's Clues video from Nickelodeon, what's supposed to be a children's television program that came out a year ago promoting all sorts of non-binary and trans families, families with two mommies and two daddies marching in the big parade. And you're just here to another episode of Conservative Casual Friday, weekly blog talk radio show with your show host, Andrew Harrod, where we like to discuss important issues of the day for conservatives and others. And today we want to discuss LGBT pride. We just concluded, perhaps you've heard, our month of June, which is now Pride Month. And we want to talk about the whole LGBT agenda, LGBT movement, and the growth of this pride, and whether people are going to react against this. With Peter LaBarbera, the founder and president of Americans for the Truth of Homosexuality. Well, Peter, thank you for joining the show.
Hey, thanks, Andrew, and I appreciate your great patience in finally getting me on. You're a very persistent person.
Glad to have you. Well, talk about
Took me forever to get back to you, and but you stuck with it. So, congrats. I'm glad to be here.
All right. Well, excellent. Glad to have you. I've seen you before, heard you speak before, and followed your work, and always found it very interesting. Well, first of all, talking about, you know, this whole idea of the month of June being Pride Month, following on the June 27th, June 28th, 1969 riots over 50 years ago in New York City at the Stonewall Inn gay bar. How has this event, this idea of Pride Month in June, evolved over the years?
Yeah, well, I think it's very good that you bring up that history because this was BLM before there was BLM. This was a anti-cop riot. The circumstances were very strange. It was a mafia-owned bar, Stonewall. It was a very violent attack. In fact, I found a document which confirms that one of the, I guess you would say LGBT, they didn't use those words back then, one of the gay or trans protesters, rioters at the Stonewall riot tried to light cops on fire who were barricaded inside the bar at one point, Andrew. So this was a violent BLM type attack, and then I was also doing research on the Pride flag itself, Andrew. The Pride flag was designed, I think the fellow's name is Gilbert Baker, who was a Christian hater. He was a Christian hater. In fact, once he marched down in a gay pride parade, I can't remember which city, maybe San Francisco, with an outfit mocking Jesus Christ. This is the creator of the pride flag, which are now ubiquitous all over the world, because this sort of homosexual and other aberrants, deviancies, this has grown into a massive cult, as it were. And once the corporations got behind it, which is in the last 10 to 20 years, and now, of course, it's almost, they're almost like robots. It's become a new religion, especially to the left, but everybody just sort of bows down to it, and it's preposterous because, of course, homosexuality is immoral and unnatural sexual behavior, and it's absolutely nothing to be proud of.
Yeah, writers like, for example, R.R. Reno at First Things wrote a recent article there talking about the living under the Rainbow Reich, you know, and you've seen perhaps memes on social media, on Twitter and so forth, of showing kind of this, the totalitarian nature of this entire pride movement that, you know, you have places like London, they just have, you know, streets lined with just rainbow flags everywhere. You know, it's just, you know, monolithic.
Well,
you know,
it's not just London. Yeah, I'm in Ohio, and right a little town here called Worthington, you know, pride flags lining the street. It's become a semi-official event, and I think that the American people have to speak out, and I think a lot of people are upset at it, but most of them don't do anything. They just remain silent. And if you remain silent in the face of evil, the evil continues, as we know throughout history. And this is certainly a metastasizing evil in our culture. I think the greatest proof of that is the recent Gallup poll. It's not very recent now. It's a few months old. I don't know if you saw that, Andrew, of the Gallup poll of LGBTQ identification. They found that the culture is now 7%, and they found that Gen Z, which I suppose is, I think that's 18 to 25-year-olds, something like that, the youngest generation, more than 20% now, 20.8% identify as LGBTQ in this Gallup poll, which is astonishing because the numbers for, you know, the oldest generations are like 1 point, you know, under 2%. And then it seems to double every generation, and now it's at 20.8% for Gen Zers.
Yeah, I mean, that was noted in a document submitted, I guess, way back in the maybe it was the Lawrence v. Texas case, the sodomy case in 2003, or perhaps later in the Obergefell case on marriage in 2015 to the Supreme Court, that statistics indicated that, you know, historically among in humanity, you know, it's only about like 1.5% of human beings who report having sort of really solely same-sex attractions, and maybe like a little bit more, like a half percentage point, that have sort of some sort of bisexual leaning. So, you know, looking at such statistics, that's just really bizarre that you have the younger generations having, you know, massively reporting these sympathies. I mean, it brings to mind what Bill Maher said, that, you know, you're seeing sort of a geographic difference, that people out in California are saying, reporting that they identify much more as LGBT, whereas, you know, people in other places like Texas or so forth are not. And you're saying, you know, it's clearly this is being indoctrinated, this is being promoted, and people are sort of responding to sort of like a chic cause here.
Yeah, absolutely. But what's shocking to me is where are the conservatives? This is a national crisis, and I think the more I look at this phenomenon, and I've followed it for now 35 years. I was a reporter at the Washington Times, and I started following this and observing it, and it seems to me this is the sort of thing that brings civilizations down. I mean, I think the UK has been terribly affected. Britain has been terribly affected by this ever expanding, you know, sort of, I think cult is a good way for me to describe it, because it's really a mass cult in the terms of the devotion. You see people's devotion to LGBTQ is far greater than, I think, than most religious people's devotion to Christ or to their religion. I'm not saying that's the case with you, or hopefully not me, Andrew, but, you know, we're seeing a religious fervor, and also this sort of desperate need to rationalize your choices. I mean, the overkill almost speaks to the aberrance of the lifestyles, right? I mean, why do they have this driving need? This, you know, pretty soon it's going to be LGBT year and LGBT decade. And there's so many specialized celebrations now, like the National Day of Transgender Visibility, and so many of these special days, you can't even keep track of them anymore. What's behind this? And I think what is behind it is, deep down, a lot of these individuals know that this is they either know it's wrong or they know it's not normal, and they're doing everything they can to tell themselves that this is a good thing, this is a normal thing, a natural thing, but no matter what they do, you can't buck up against the truth and against God.
Yeah, that strikes me as a difference, that this incessant desire for approval, I mean, not just autonomy. I mean, if you compare and contrast the whole LGBT movement, it's different from, like, say, pornographers, you know, someone like Hugh Hefner or Larry Flint or something. I mean, if you had criticized Playboy magazine, you know, Hugh Hefner in the past, you know, their response was always something like, well, if you don't like it, just don't buy the magazine. Or indeed, that whole pro-choice argument has been made with respect to abortion, you know, my body, my choice. If you're against abortion, just don't have one. So there the emphasis is on autonomy, that you have pro-choice. Whereas here with the LGBT movement, of course, it can't just be a choice. It can't be a free choice. You know, you must celebrate with me. You must praise
right.
me. You have to give me your approval. And as you're saying, I think it is indeed fundamentally sort of like the telltale heart with Edgar Allan Poe in his short story, that, you know, deep down inside, these people know it's really wrong. It's really disordered. And so they just simply cannot – they have to get this false sense of approval to feel happy about themselves. And so it's just an incessant desire to get the entire society to constantly go along with them.
Right, right. Well said. And I think now it's crept into conservatism, and I don't know if you saw it, but, you know, when you have conservatives praising the likes of Dave Rubin, who's created he's in a so-called homosexual marriage, and I put quote marks around marriage because, of course, two guys or two women, that's never really a marriage, no matter what the law says. And you saw conservatives praising him. He's acquired two children, and they're in this sort of these artificial gay-led families where they're trying to recreate family, but there's a gender missing, there's a sex missing, there's no mom or there's no dad. And you see conservatives rallying around because Dave Rubin's done a lot of good work in the conservative movement, of course. He's an exile from the left, and we love that. But we seem to lack the ability to say, hey, we like all this stuff that Dave Rubin's doing. However, we can never approve of his homosexual identification, and certainly don't approve of his same-sex so-called marriage. And what's happening is these gay conservatives are now becoming the greatest, the most effective, or the most influential gay activists in terms of changing minds, because, of course, we're not going to listen to some radical Democrat ideologue, far-left gay activist, but when Dave Rubin gets up there and says, me and my husband, and I'm putting that in quotes, have a family now. We've got these two children, which we've acquired through another dubious procedure. I've forgotten the word all of a sudden another woman birth
conception
artificial conception. And you see conservatives celebrating with him because they, you know, and it's just so sad to me because there's a lacking of wisdom now within the Republican and conservative world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, well, that brings up a point, you know, talking about Dave Rubin and others, or Pete Buttigieg, Secretary of Transportation as well, you know, of course, such homosexuals, you know, to fulfill their desire to become parents, they resort to these means of artificial conception and you know, involving for men then in particular of these surrogate mothers. But of course, others have pointed out that, you know, these procedures, they involve things like the creation of, you know, all of these embryos, many of which are sort of thrown away or disposed of. And then you have cases
right.
where, you know, once the embryo is inseminated, embryos are inseminated, you have cases where, you know, apparently you can't really control the process that well, and sometimes you get too many embryos put into a woman's body, and then you have what's so-called selective reduction abortion, or for that matter, you have contracts that these men sign that where, you know, if the baby doesn't really turn out the way they want it, you know, then there'll be a clause in the contract, like they'll demand an abortion, otherwise say they want pay the woman, you know, in order to get rid of, say, a baby that has Down syndrome or something. Or, of course, you know, you had this case out in California recently, these two guys they're suing a fertility clinic because they got a daughter instead of a son, and they wanted a son, and now they're saying, you know, we're going to have to go back through the process to try to get a son, and they're suing for damages, like $100,000. Another case a couple of years ago in Ohio, there was a lesbian who got angry because she got the wrong semen, and she wound up with a child with semen from a black guy. So now she says, you know, I'm white and I'm raising this, you know, this biracial child. That's going to involve all sorts of issues of, you know, like racism and so forth. I just don't want to deal with that. So, yeah, it's really sort of a crass commercialization. What does the pro-life movement say about this? I mean, we're talking about, you know, overturning
the pro-lifers
Roe v.
have been. Yeah, they've been speaking out on this, and I think they spoke out against the surrogacy. But what really disheartens me is, you know, conservatives should take a principled stand on this issue, and many do, but nowadays many don't. And we saw the vote in Congress where 47 Republicans voted to codify homosexual so-called marriage because they're afraid that the Supreme Court will overturn the Obergefell decision, which is probably unlikely in the near term. But, you know, I don't understand why, if we were able to hold on the life issue, and most pro-lifers did. I mean, they were principled, and they didn't deviate that. Maybe some deviated on rape and incest, but then they even came back on that. Why are we seeing this exodus from principle by conservatives on this particular issue? Is it just because it's a very hard issue? Or, you know, what is it? Why can't conservatives just universally say homosexuality is wrong and we must resist all efforts to normalize and codify and institutionalize homosexuality as some kind of a civil right?
Yeah, it seems to me, dealing with the pro-life angle, one thing the pro-life movement will have to emphasize is that this really is destructive of life. So, I think there should be laws that have been recently, I guess, suggested maybe in Texas or elsewhere that, you know, these methods should be banned that do indeed involve destruction of embryos, creation and destruction of embryos, or, you know, any such selective abortion. So that'd be one angle that I think that, you know, that this entire homosexual movement involving these sort of, you know, fake families, artificially created homosexual households are indeed anti-life, to say nothing of course, the distortions and the problems that arise for any child raised in such a contrived artificial environment.
Yes, yes. Yeah, well said again, Andrew. And I agree. And I think one thing my organization, we take a principled approach. So while I'm ecstatic that conservatives are finally seeing that the gay movement has been indoctrinating kids, this has been going on for like more than three decades in a serious way. And now we're seeing the fruition of it where it's just completely exploded in the schools. And a lot of people are now aware of this. However, this has been building and building. And I mean, the there were homosexual children's books, so-called, you know, Heather Has Two Mommies and Daddy's Roommates. Those are more than 30 years old now, I think. You know, so this is a long effort, and the left is good at you know, setting a strategy and marching toward it in unison. And now I think conservatives are seeing what's happened, and they want to fight this evil in the schools and this effort to indoctrinate youth. On the other hand, I think there's this I think it's a regrettable development where homosexual conservatives are now some of the leading spokesmen for conservative ideas, and the problem is they are compromised on this particular issue, whether it's Tammy Bruce or Dave Rubin. I mean, I heard a Dave Rubin video where on YouTube where he was talking about the process of a surrogacy, and that's the word I forgot there, surrogacy. I'm getting old here, losing words. He was talking about his attempted surrogacy, and he said, you know, me and my boyfriend, something to the effect of, me and my husband, he called him, have plenty of sperm. That's not the problem. We have plenty of sperm. Yes, of course. You know, you're missing a sex. That's how it works, Dave. This is biology 101. And the problem with making gay conservatives so-called the leading spokesman on the right is it basically ends up compromising the witness of the right. You know, Ronald Reagan talked about the three-legged stool of conservatism. You've got the strong defense, free market economy, and then you also have social family values, social conservatism. And what's happening within the conservative world, I think, is that the libertarians are whittling away at that third leg of the stool. They want to create a Republican Party that is pretty much – they're pro-life because they know that they can't touch that one. That is almost sacred on the right. But they really want to chuck out the homosexuality, being opposed to homosexuality and same-sex marriage, so-called. I think many libertarians want to eliminate those from the rights credo.
Yeah, and like, for example, how are institutions like CPAC dealing with this issue? I mean, I remember about 2 years ago, I guess it was, there was the whole sort of kerfuffle, you know, mass resistance trying to get a sponsorship
right.
for CPAC and have a booth there. And, you know, they were told by CPAC that, no, they couldn't do it. I mean, you had also, you know, this Miss Meg, I guess he was called, guy, this cross-dressing guy who went around at CPAC about – you know, again, maybe a year or two ago, and, you know, sort of promoting this kind of pro-Trump, you know, sort of transgenderism. I mean, what's going on at, say,
I missed that one, Andrew. I missed that one.
Yeah, Abby Johnson talked about him. Yeah, he is some, you know, I forget what it is, you know, Miss MAGA or whatever.
Yeah, and I think, who was it, the head of CPAC, what's his name? I forgot his name.
Oh,
here.
Matt Schlapp. Yeah, he had the whole thing about
Matt Schlapp. Yeah, he
Leah
basically
Comet.
Conceded and allowed. Yeah, they had gone from opposing Log Cabin Republicans, which is the gay Republican group, now led by Rick Grinnell, who, by the way, I would say Rick Grinnell is probably the most effective gay activist on the right. But they opposed Log Cabin Republicans before Grinnell took charge. Now they welcome them in. And, you know, so this is a problem because – When you're abiding basically a sin movement, this is, I think, fundamentally a sin movement. When you're trying to say that's part of conservatism, that's a problem.
Yeah, right. Well, we're talking about Rick Grinnell. I remember, you know, controversies when Trump first appointed him. I mean, what's his background, you know, before becoming like director of the CIA and such in Trump's cabinet? And, you know, what sort of involvement has he had on these issues?
Well, Grinnell is – I mean, we would probably agree with 90% of what he does and says about – you know, he's a foreign policy expert. You know, he does a lot of – I agree with him. He has kind of a Reagan-esque foreign policy outlook, I think. However, you know, he's also a gay activist, and this is exactly what we're talking about here. And one of Rick Grinnell's little crusades that got very little attention under Trump was his effort – his crusade against the worldwide criminalization of homosexuality. Now, let's put a caveat in here right now, Andrew, and I'm sure I assume you're going to agree with me. We all agree that the draconian punishments under Islam for homosexuality are absurd and wrong. We don't push homosexuals off of buildings. We don't kill. We don't hang homosexuals like they do in Iran. We're not talking about that. But that I would agree with Rick Grinnell on that. However, when you talk about against the criminalization of homosexuality worldwide, ultimately what it comes down to is, and I haven't researched this well enough to know if Grinnell specifically targeted this, but you start targeting countries that ban same-sex so-called marriage, which we did in America until 2015. So, you know, it moves on from sodomy laws, which, and I think sodomy laws have a purpose because sodomy is, you just like we have laws against adultery, we have laws against incest, we have laws against sodomy. That doesn't mean we go arresting banging on the doors of homosexual men and hauling them away. These are canards of the left. But when you talk worldwide criminalization against homosexuality and make that a campaign under a Republican administration like Grinnell did, ultimately you start targeting countries like Jamaica, where I visited, which has a sodomy law in the books, and you start targeting countries like that, and it becomes a way of promoting the normalization of homosexuality through U.S. foreign policy, which I think is wrong.
Yeah, I think of sodomy laws, you know, I guess, the Christian stance is, you know, hate the sin but love the sinner. Maybe you could have laws, you know, I don't think there's much desire among anyone here in the United States among people like me, you know, to say, you know, I don't know, you know, punish people because they engage in adults engage in consensual sex. But, you know, certainly you don't want to, you know, promote the behavior or give any sort of public status. I mean, maybe you could have, say,
right,
you know, not a criminal law or something, but just a law saying, you know, the policy is that, you know, homosexuality has various harms, and it's certainly not, does not promote any societal interest like the family or something. So there should be, you know, no sort of legal recognition of it. I guess I think back to the whole.
There's also one other factor, Andrew. There's one other factor that's interesting, is that sodomy laws are often used to prosecute predators, sexual predators.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is problematic, and and of course Lawrence v. Texas was the big case, and that was a huge that was back in, was that 2001 or 2003? But Lawrence v. Texas was the one that opened the watershed. And homosexual activists, of course, they've always progressed through incrementalism. They say we never want to indoctrinate children. They said that at one time in their history. Now, of course, they're all about indoctrinating children, even subjecting little children to drag queen story hours where they are taught by outlandishly dressed homosexual men, mocking women, by the way. You know, why is blackface unacceptable, and yet drag queens in which caricature women is acceptable? I never understood that. But, you know, the homosexual activist movement has always progressed through incrementalism, and now we're at the point where they're just, it's almost anything goes, and they are sexualizing children with this. Their main thought now is that it's okay to indoctrinate children in not only sexual perversion, the idea of teaching kids, for example, about anal sex, because they might turn out to be gay someday, they might end up gay, and they have to know how to, just like we teach a sex ed, they need to know this kind of sex, you know. But beyond sex, now they're, of course, propagandizing and indoctrinating children in radical gender identities, which continue to metastasize, and this is just... It's sort of the ultimate Pandora's box. It began with gay, and I always tweet that, you know, just remember, it all started with normalizing gay. That's where it started in this deviant sex and deviant gender revolution. But now where it is, it's so out of control. Most people just, they can't almost understand how we got here. It's so bad.
Yeah, talking about that, like drag queen story and so forth, I mean, you have now as people like Christopher Rufo have noted, you have precisely these events where what he calls trans strippers appear, and, you know, it's just really lewd,
yeah,
behavior and people getting naked. And at these, all these pride parades, as we've seen more recently on Twitter and so forth, here you have, you know, naked men riding around bicycles, like at Seattle's Pride Parade, or,
yes,
you know, Los Angeles, they're like sadomasochists going out and whipping each other in public. And, you know, you had Christina Aguilar, her name right, you know, she
Aguilar,
went out to,
I think,
Pride event. Yeah, Aguilar. She went out to a Pride event in Los Angeles. She's wearing this, you know, this big strap-on phallus, you know, and you know, kids can see that.
Yeah.
And you've had people, you know, twerking and showing their genitals at all sorts of drag queen, so-called family-friendly drag queen events
yes,
for kids in Alaska or Ireland or whatever. What sort of laws are available to stop this, or what sort of laws are needed in the future to, you know, just really stop this public promotion of such lewdness, particularly in front of kids?
Well, I think the laws are on the books probably in these major cities, but they're just not enforced. I remember, and I've been doing this, I've been monitoring this movement for so long, I remember one in Chicago where a man literally right in front of the police, there were some Christian pastors, street preachers, they were basically barricaded behind fences to protect them. They were preaching against the Pride Parade, and it was end of the parade, and the sadomasochists were coming, the most radical fringe of the LGBTQ, which itself is a fringe, but the fringe of the fringe was marching past, and I got this on tape. a guy stopped in the road. This is right in front of the cops who were protecting the Christian protesters. He plants himself and another guy. I know this is a family-friendly show, so I'll try to describe it, you know, vaguely. A guy comes rushing up and plants his face into the rear end of another man right in front of the police. Nothing was done. Nothing was done. And I actually lost it. I went up right in front of a police. Said, how can you allow this? And he didn't say anything. And basically, of course, they were under orders. That day of the week, that parade was hands off for the LGBTQ movement. And this takes us to another point, which is they have special privileges. Every, you know, the left talks about straight privilege and white privilege and all this baloney, but it's the gays, the gay activists who are, and the trans activists who have the privilege in our culture. They're the ones who don't enforce nudity laws. You can't tell me that every major city where there's, and this has been going on for decades, by the way, this is not a new development. And I've been chronicling it. I got it going way back. And pedophiles, remember, the North American Man-Boy Love Association, which is a man-boy sex group, in other words, a pederasty pedophile group, marched in early gay pride parades, NAMBLA. So this has been going on for a long time. They never enforce it. And the reason is because homosexual activists and transgender activists, et cetera, are a key core constituency in the urban democratic model, and they enjoy special rights. They're able to march nude down the street. You know, nobody else can, and we don't want anybody to, but somehow they have – the laws aren't enforced against them. And it's even worse in Canada, by the way, Andrew. I don't know if you ever saw the Toronto Gay Pride Parade, which is just rife with nudity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember LifeSite News had a story on events in Canada. I mean, a lot of their members at LifeSite News are from Canada. They're leaders like John Henry Weston from Canada. About a decade ago or so, I saw a story there that apparently they were reporting on some sort of gay pride parade in Canada. And it was actually going to be covered by a taxpayer-funded public radio show. There's a news announcement on, you know, sort of their version of one of their versions of NPR up in Canada. And they were just happily reporting that this parade in Canada, it was going to involve men just publicly having sex with each other, you know, masturbating on the street. So, you know, telling people, you know, if you bring your kids or whatever, this is what you might find there. And there was no, right, there was no commentary of, like, this is wrong or anything. So really shocking. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's generally that attitude, that paternalistic attitude, that sort of condescending attitude, whereas you're our allies. And we don't really – I'm talking about liberals here, Democrats. These are our allies, and we don't really want to know and talk about everything they do, you know, like we're seeing with the monkeypox virus is basically spread by hyper-promiscuous homosexual men at these orgy parties, which are a part and parcel of the gay movement, these, you know, pride festivals and these sadomasochistic events and these orgies. You know, the liberals are sort of like – you're our allies and you know, we're 100% for you, but we don't really want to talk about this stuff. And so the media, of course, one of the big shifts in my covering this over a long time, Andrew, is the media has gone from at least offering some kind of opposing quotes in stories about homosexuality and transgenderism. Now they basically – it's all gay all the time. The stories written by the mainstream press and in mainstream journalism pretty much could have been written by a homosexual activist group. That's how biased they are. And it's really done a disservice to the country, because instead of a sort of an even-handed look at some of the absurdities we're witnessing, such as drag queen story hours, you know, outlandishly perverted guys, you know, doing this in front of children, instead of some kind of media balance and saying, hey, is this really a good thing? We're not seeing, for the most part, there are exceptions, but we're not seeing the checks and balances that the media should offer, the accountability. There is no accountability for the LGBTQ movement, and so the abuses just roll on.
Well, yeah, and thinking of, you know, you talk about monkeypox and all these orgies and such. Another incident I remember, I guess it was back in 2006 or so, Bill Donahue from the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights led a boycott movement of Miller Beer because they were offering some sort of catering of the Folsom Street Fair out in San Francisco, which is this great, you know, sadomasochism festival. And Bill Donahue on his website for the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights, you know, had pictures posted of all these, you know, men walking around in G-strings and, you know, spanking each other with paddles and sticking sharp objects into each other.
Oh, yeah, and I covered that, Andrew. I was involved in that story. I covered that. In fact, we exposed the nudity at the Folsom Street Fair, and you better believe the next Folsom Street Fair in San Francisco, which is endorsed by Gavin Newsom, by the way, when he was mayor, we will see the next one in September, and it will have complete men in completely nude walking around that city, because their nudity law in San Francisco coincidentally has an exception for gay events. So they have an exception to the nudity laws, and they'll be out there in force, you know, whipping each other and this grotesque, you know, this is part of the movement, and this is what comes with the movement. And yet we're supposed to pretend that this is just like any other civil rights cause. You know, we're supposed to pretend this is like the traditional civil rights and human rights, but it's not. It's really a sin movement. It's a deviant sex movement. And this is what you would expect from a revolution that glorifies what was once called a crime against nature. You go back to the early founding documents, the constitutions, the charters of the colonies, the American, you know, read what it says about the you know, the abominable crime against nature, sodomy laws back then when we were, you know, when people were, you know, America was just forming what was about to be the United States of America. We were a much more moral, much more Christian nation. People, and these behaviors were clearly proscribed back then. Now they're celebrated. It's very sad.
Yeah, Mayor Gavin Newsom at the time, now Governor Gavin Newsom of California, but he was started out as mayor of San Francisco. I remember, yeah, he had given an official proclamation welcoming the Folsom Street Fair, and I presume, you know, subsequent mayors of San Francisco continue with such official welcomes. But, you know, you're talking about monkeypox. How have public health authorities then dealt with monkeypox, which I guess, you know, I'm sure you know, is really just another fundamentally a sexually transmitted disease. Like AIDS in the past, which afflicts homosexuals. I mean, are there any, once again, as with AIDS, are there attempts to sort of, you know, hide that fact and try to suggest that this is some sort of disease that's going to affect everyone?
Yes, and I'm glad you asked. And I, by the way, I texted you a great piece in the Washington Post. I can't believe the Washington Post ran it, but there's a reporter named Benjamin Ryan, I believe his name is. He writes for NBC and others. He covers infectious diseases, and he's an open homosexual who is essentially he has HIV. He's lived with HIV, and he does not tolerate this sort of sentimentality, which wants to sort of cover up what the actual story is. And he's quite open that this is pretty much a gay disease, this latest outbreak of monkeypox. And it's linked to these, as I said earlier, I don't know how, they're orgies. These are parties in which there's rampant, promiscuous, anonymous sex between men. And this has been going on in gay bathhouses. This is the bathhouse spread was a big part of the spread of HIV. And you can go to Randy Shields' book. He was a homosexual journalist. He wrote a book called And the Band Played On about AIDS. And he talked about the behavior in these bathhouses, which is, Andrew, I'm sure you agree with me, the promiscuity is something that most Americans can't even conceive of. We're talking, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah on steroids. And this, of course, is now a factor in the spread of monkeypox. And yet you're seeing some gay activists are attacking the government, like Mike Signorelli, who's a famous gay activist. He says, oh, the government's not doing enough. But he doesn't want to talk about these orgies. There was one in Spain. There was these are traveled to. It's a perfect spreading event because you get gay men traveling all over the world to these orgies and then bringing the disease back home. And so it's almost impossible to describe how evil these events are because of the sexual nature of them, but this is what monkeypox is, how it's being spread now, because normally this is a disease, this was related to spread by in Africa by, you know, contact with animals. You know, this is not a, this is a human to human spread, which is, as I understand it, is not the norm. And so, and then you're seeing, of course, the gay activists, a lot of gay activists, Benjamin Ryan is the rare exception who wants to tell the truth. Over 90% of the cases are linked to gay men, by the way, men who have sex with men, Andrew. But then you, the norm is, a lot of the gay activists are, they want to talk about stigma. They want to talk about, oh, anybody can get monkeypox, which is technically true. But what's really relevant is why are over 90% of the cases men who have sex with men. That's the real story here.
Yeah, Benjamin Ryan, I hadn't known about him much before you mentioned his name, but he of course had the faux pas, the gaffe. He had tweeted out that you talk about men who have sex with men. He was tweeting that, yeah, this is something that really results from men who have sex with men, but he made a typo and that he wrote, this is something that results from men who have sex with me, because he forgot the N on men.
I missed that. Yeah, I saw.
Yeah, people were joking about that. At first I didn't notice it. People were really laughing about it. I looked at the tweet and I didn't understand, but apparently, yeah, if you look closely at it, you'll see that he writes, this is a disease about men who have sex with men, or he tries to write that, but he forgot that he was quickly typing and didn't get the last N in, so it reads, this is a disease that results from
funny.
Men having sex with me.
Well, you know, that's funny, and of course that'll probably get more attention than what he's trying to say, and I commend this man. I'm sorry I wish he could leave the lifestyle like so many men have. And by the way, I've met over 50 people, men and women, who've walked away from homosexuality, Andrew. So that's another media myth, which is, you know, the gay movement is now trying to criminalize the idea that you can leave this lifestyle, which is so strange, because you can become anything. You can become gender queer or agender or non-binary or bi-gender, all these identities, but somehow you can't go back to being straight and normal. How weird is that? But anyways, this Benjamin Ryan guy, he's basically in the tradition of Schiltz, Randy Schiltz, who was the brave gay journalist who told the truth about he did not shy away from exposing the orgies, the high-risk gay sexual behaviors, which were linked to AIDS, and actually, Andrew, are linked to virtually all the sexually transmitted diseases, chlamydia, titus, A and B, I think, syphilis. Syphilis is now pretty much a gay-spread disease. I think it's well over 80% of syphilis cases are now linked to men who have sex with men, whether they call themselves gay or not, because that's the way it's described by the CDC and medical professionals. They say men who have sex with men, doesn't matter what you call yourself, that's the category. And all of these sexually transmitted diseases are disproportionately linked to men who have sex with men. And once in a while you come upon a brave liberal who will actually tell the truth, but most of the gay community is too busy trying to say, oh, anybody can get monkeypox, which, of course, is technically true, but it's not the point.
Yeah, and homosexuality, particularly among men, acts of sodomy, particularly have been noted, as you indicate, as being very destructive. You know, big disease spreaders, which brings up a question of, we had all these COVID-19 lockdowns. Why can't we at least then shut down these super spreader events among gay men at bathhouses or something? Shut down bathhouses to hinder the spread here of this disease. But this idea of marriage that we talk about, same-sex marriage, has that in any way domesticated homosexuals as was advocated? I mean, you talked about Andrew Sullivan, was the great proponent of this, and yet saying that, if gays could only, enter this conservative lifestyle and enter into marriage. But then, of course, he had the big scandal that he had back in 2003 has revealed that he had posted online this barebacking website with nude photos of himself that is for, you know, men to meet up and have casual sex without condoms. And that was exposed by this gay publication. I believe it was the Blade or such. And, you know, I remember reading online recently about it. There was responses from, like, people at the Nation saying, you know, look, you know, why do we have to follow Andrew Sullivan and have this definition of homosexuality that, you know, we have to be monogamous or something? I mean, we don't want that. We just want to have, you know, fun, have, you know, casual relationships, orgies, whatever, and we're tired of being dictated to by Andrew Sullivan. So has there been any sort of, like, you know, massive increase of homosexuals wanting to, quote, unquote, get married and enter into stable relationships? Has this promise fulfilled itself of a domestication of the homosexual movement?
Yeah, I don't know the exact answer to that, Andrew. I'm sure there's been some domestication, but I think it's interesting. Andrew Sullivan also wrote, and I can't remember the name, which book it was, Virtually Normal. He wrote in his book, Virtually Normal, that gay men have a higher toleration for outside sex than straight men. Well, isn't that convenient? And so do we really know? I mean, the history of these gay male relationships especially, but also female relationships, lesbian relationships tend to be shorter. You know, they'll go for a few years and then they'll have another ones. And, of course, there are lifelong homosexual relationships as well, but that doesn't make it right. But there's this sort of open marriage phenomenon, and I think far more likely than, you know, I think it's much more likely that we're going to see the gay idea of open marriages take root in the straight world, and there's a huge push for that, of course, with polyamory and multiple partner unions and this whole, you know, this is part of the queer, so-called queer movement. We're much more likely to see the spread of that than we are to see all of a sudden, 90% of gay men wanting to be in lifelong homosexual so-called marriages. Of course, we'll see exceptions, but the exceptions don't make the rule. And my hunch is that even in gay marriages, I'm sure there are a lot of open gay marriages. And also, you know, a factor that's never talked about. We talk about how gay marriages, gay-led families, are, you know, intentionally motherless or intentionally fatherless. In other words, they are creating a family that doesn't have a mother by design or doesn't have a dad by design for these kids. But there's also the factor of the homosexuality, which is sexual deviancy, is paraded to these innocent kids as if it's right. I mean, you know, it's normal for a kid to, when mom and dad are in bed in the morning, the kid runs in and comes in, joins the mother and father in bed. What? In a homosexual household, the kid is going to run in a bed with two men in that bed. That is perverse. That is a form of indoctrination, as it were. You know, and so it's not just – there's so many reasons why these marriages, so-called, and these families, we do not want to encourage them. And again, it comes back to I don't want the conservatives to get into that field of trying to rationalize this misbehavior. But to answer your question, I think the data isn't in yet. We'll see. But we know that the other fringe, the opposite fringe in the gay movement, the wild, anonymous orgies, the bathhouses are booming again. Post-COVID, they're opening up again. This continues despite the passage of gay marriage laws. And so there's many homosexuals who relish the idea of the promiscuity, the deviance, the aberrance. That's a larger part, I would say, of the movement than the sort of domesticated caricature that we're seeing offered up by the likes of Dave Rubin and others, you know, trying to say this is the norm. And one last thing, Andrew, I don't know if you saw it, but there have been many opportunities for conservatives to speak truth into Dave Rubin's life. And the one I remember the most is the avuncular Prager, Dennis Prager. I'm going to paraphrase this, but Dave Rubin in an interview with Dennis Prager once asked him, he says, would you say it's wrong for me if I wanted to have sex with another man? And all Prager had to say was, absolutely. God condemns it in the Old Testament and the New Testament. God condemns it in, you know, Hebrew law, you know, Old Testament law. But instead, Dennis Prager sort of went politically correct and he was afraid to speak truth. And if Dennis Prager, who's one of the top conservative moralists in the world, is afraid to tell an openly homosexual man that it's wrong to practice sodomy with another man, then I'm afraid that speaks for millions who are also afraid to speak truth on this issue.
Yeah, Dennis Prager, of course, you know, there's a lot of astonishment when Dennis Prager, you know, sent out like a tweet or such, you know, praising, congratulating Ruben and his partner on, you know, becoming fathers, as it were, through surrogacy and taking these kids. Indeed, before, you know, I remember reading years ago from Dennis Prager, like in one interview or something, you know, he was talking about homosexuality and he was noting that, like, you know, he did not consider it normal for a man to not be attracted to a woman's genitalia. You know, in another article, I think he wrote, he talked about how there's some court case, you know, promoting homosexuality, you know, some gay rights case. And, you know, he was saying, like, you know, the outcome was dictated by just this thesis that, you know, you've got to make homosexuals happy. But indeed, you talk about promiscuity. I mean, looking at, for example, the 2004 Commonwealth of Massachusetts Supreme Court case that first instituted in a state level this idea of homosexual marriage, the Goodrich case, which was released precisely on May 17th, 2004 by the court because that was the 50th anniversary of the 1954 Brown v. Board of Education case with integration of schools, striking down segregation of schools, and they wanted to make the statement that, you know, gay rights is the new civil rights frontier. But Yeah, the lesbian plaintiff in that case, Goodrich, maybe you heard several years later, you know, she broke up with her whatever her lesbian partner was. So, you know, there was no, you know, living happily ever after there. And, you know, and Andrew Sullivan, perhaps you recall, in his writings, he talked about homosexuals would probably be, as he called it, monogamish, you know, sort of, you know, not
– Yeah, monogamish. Yeah, right, monogamish. And my supposition would be that many of these gay so-called marriages would embrace monogamish. Now, of course, there are exceptions, but the exception, it's sort of like maybe they're anomalies. I don't know how common it is, but it's really just sort of a fig leaf for some sort of play at normality. But anybody who examines a situation, like I said, like the you know, the parents in bed, but I think you could apply it just everywhere. Andrew, are you married?
Oh, no, I'm not.
Okay, well, let's say you're married. I'm married to my wife. If I peck my wife on the cheek and you've got your nephews or somebody in by, I don't think you're going to be upset. Now, if I started making out, you know, public displays of affection, you might say, hey, that's a little much. But the average parent, and I'm speaking for, I think, a lot of parents, sort of likes it when normal, wholesome marriage is affirmed to a man and a woman holding hands at a picnic. A man, you know, kissing his wife gently in public, they don't get upset at that. Now I'll take it to the homosexual so-called married couple. I don't want my young child or my niece or nephew seeing a man kissing another man in public. It's a total disconnect. That is deviance that's being modeled. And I don't want to see I don't think young children, it's healthy for them to see two guys holding hands like romantically in public. So it doesn't, you know, what we've come to love about marriage and family, it doesn't translate to the homosexual led household. And instead what happens is the norm gets corrupted. And now we're seeing that, I guess, you know, what we've talked about with the conservatism, we've seen that with conservatism. The injection, the elevation of homosexual advocates as some of the leading lights within the right is actually now corrupting conservatism, just like injecting homosexuality into any institution corrupts it. And that's what we're seeing right before our eyes. You know, I heard the editor of Breitbart News, one of the leading conservative websites in the world, say that they've got several gay writers now, openly gay writers. And the line coming from Breitbart now is very strange. It's saying that the trans agenda is a big threat. This is what Greg Gutfeld is saying on Fox News, by the way, too. He's a libertarian, saying that the trans agenda is really a threat at its heart to gay men because some of these men who are now becoming transgender so-called women would just be healthy gay men if it wasn't for the trans movement. And I thought to myself, wow, that's odd. What a strange way to spin the transgender movement as a threat to gay men.
Yeah, I think for many kids, would indeed be fundamentally disturbing to see any sort of indication of such romantic affection among same-sex couples. And I guess it brings up the issue of this whole word of grooming that's come up, calling people in schools and so forth with groomers. I mean, is not then any exposure of children to any sort of sexuality outside of a mother and father, a sexuality which is, of course, intimately related to a child because that's the way the children are created. Is that not a form of grooming? I mean, you're saying, if you're going to have a so-called such a homosexual household, any child placed in that, they're going to be constantly exposed to this behavior, seeing two guys in bed. Images were placed like that in precisely that book, Daddy's Roommate, which came out in the 1990s. I remember seeing images of that. They showed one image of, the two guys in bed together. Austin Roos, whom I'm sure, for a Catholic activist on these matters, he once wrote on Facebook that he was watching a cooking show on cable television with his kids at his home, and all of a sudden one of the women on the show said, yeah, this is my wife, she's a lesbian, and Austin said, I wasn't able to catch it and edit it out before my kids with some sort of device on television that you can, catch what's said and silence it. And then all of a sudden, his kids were asking, Daddy, why does a woman have a wife? So any exposure of kids to such homosexual or transgendered behavior, a form of grooming, you are indeed indoctrinating them.
Yes. And then let's be clear. There's direct sexual grooming, which is how pedophiles operate. A pedophile will leave a porno magazine where there are young kids congregating, and he'll look, see which boy, let's say a homosexual pedophile, he'll see which boy gravitates to the porn magazine, and that will become his target. There's that kind of grooming, and then there's this sort of indoctrination, like exactly what you're describing. This is inappropriate sexual misinformation being directed at impressionable kids. And one of my writers a long time ago wrote a great piece about a gay conference, and they talked about how these young minds, they're super impressionable, and that's why they target them. And so what we're seeing is, of course, if you're taking kids and you're targeting them with sexual and gender information that is inappropriate for such a young child, any sexual information, but most especially deviant sexual information and gender nonsense. The genderbread man, where they're advertising these genders, that they are putting ideas in kids' minds. That's the whole point. And these kids' innocence is being violated on a daily basis, and the teachers aren't even teachers anymore, Andrew. They call themselves change agents, and they think this change is good. They think this gender confusion is a wonderful thing. They think the gender binary, male and female, they condemn it as as analogous to racism. I mean, it's just sickening what's happening to young people. And of course, it is a form of grooming because this is an age when children's innocence and wholesomeness should be respected. But instead, it's violated with these sexual left messaging techniques.
Yeah, well, I guess one last question closing out. What do you think are the developments for sort of any sort of conservative counter-revolution or what signs do you see of that? For example, politically, do you think this whole rainbow revolution, is it going to drive away various groups from the Democratic Party, like, say, Latinos or such, more working-class groups that are going to say, hey, look, this is just nuts. We got to stop this.
Yes, I think it is driving them away. I think it's driving independents away. And my counsel to the Republicans, not that they're going to listen to me, but what I would say is do stay principled. It's good that conservatives have finally recognized the LGBTQ program in schools to indoctrinate children. However, by celebrating homosexuality and celebrating Dave Rubin's, you know, and his homosexual partner, surrogacy babies, you will turn away the very people you want to bring in. In other words, for example, I think Black Americans are far more likely to oppose homosexuality than white Americans. I think some surveys show that. And so you're going to I heard an actual liberal commentator say that Pete Buttigieg wouldn't have a chance in the Democratic primary because Black Democrats will not vote for a gay president. So especially a white gay president, I suppose. The Republican Party needs to stay principled like it did on life. It needs to stay principled on homosexuality. We welcome the votes of anybody who wants to vote in a conservative direction, but do not cater and pander to gay marriage or any of these sexual left revolutionary movements. Do not turn the conservative movement into a movement that ends up adopting progressive sexual ideas, 10 or 20 years later than the progressives do.
All right. Excellent. Well, for our listeners out there, you've been listening to another show of Conservative Casual Friday, weekly blog talk radio podcast with your show host, Andrew Harrod, where we like to discuss important issues of the day for conservatives and others. And we've been talking with Peter LaBarbera, president and founder of Americans for the Truth about homosexuality, about LGBT pride, and counter reaction to that in recent days. Well, Peter, thank you for joining the show.
Thank you, Andrew. Can I get my website out real quick?
Yeah, sure.
Sure. The website is Americans for Truth, and that's F-O-R, AmericansForTruth.com or .org.
All right, excellent. And for our listeners out there, tune in next week for another episode of Conservative Casual Friday.